next presenter is Jean-Olivier Brassard-Desmond, and he is presenting for Jean-Claude Mangaron, who has developed this work. He's the Emeritus Professor of the EPHE and Honorary Director of the Mission of Mali in Syria.
Thank you. Before talking about why archaeological analysis is fundamental before any tentative of reconstitution, I would like to draw your attention to the fact that the work which follows is the fruit of the reflection of Professor Jean-Claude Mangaron. My intervention is due to the fact that I worked with him on the Red House of Mari in Syria, about which I will speak later, and that Professor Mangaron could not present this communication himself. So, without archaeological and architectural analysis, one does nothing but build walls or imagine volumes that nobody can argue the existence of. For example, on this picture, you can see that the Professor Amier has taken just the map and raising up the walls, no more. For example, in another way, Professor Meleart, who was excavating Asilar in Turkey, has taken the planimetric view too and present this restitution just when we can see on this second picture, rising up the walls and no more. There are no arguments to finally found this sort of restitution. It was made in 1970 for this drawing, but this way of working is not only specific to our predecessor. Since today we still find examples which are still too often the rule rather than the exception. For example, for Tel Beidar, who is a recent excavation, you can see the tell, it is in Syria too, you can see the tell how it was found, and this is the restitution. You can see that the ground drawing or putting here is not the same that we can see on the excavation found. So it's the same way, not in 2D but in 3D, we're just rising up the walls and no more. So using 2D or 3D technique to understand how buildings were before is not sufficient, in particular when these buildings were not built of stones but in wood or in mud brick, like the architecture I will use later in this communication. And no more remains to the archaeologist but the foundations or the level of occupation. We need a work methodology prior to any reconstitution work. Before taking the example of the Red House of Mari, it is necessary to present the logical basis of our reflection. Then, more quickly, I will present two other examples in order to show that what we propose is not only for simple domestic housing, nor for just housing itself. Because a construction is made by human beings, the measurement of this construction is the one of the human beings itself. So, over the question of dimensions, a certain number of requirements should not to be forgotten. Protection against the external environment, circulation of the people, lighting, where the light comes from, breathing, ventilation, management of the residues of activity. If we forget this basic data, there is no longer question of a building as a place of life, but of a coffin. Protection, sure, but no circulation, no light, no breath, no nothing. In addition to these constraints, the architect must respect the elementary laws of physics. So, a construction must take into account equilibrium of the edifice, that means vertical loads, structural lines, objective to achieve relation between superstructure and infrastructure. Knowing that, the archaeologist will start by analyzing the archaeological clues, then the architectural clues, taking into account the previous constraints. The whole data will be inventoried and the archaeologist will estimate and reappraise the degree of credibility of each piece of data. The totality of work being put in competition with other examples, if this exists. So, for the archaeological analysis, we have to take into account 8 of the preserved walls, volume of ground between the walls, presence of artifacts between the walls, presence of artifacts on the ground, taking the destruction mode into account. And for the architecture analysis, the same equilibrium of the edifice according to the used materials, so with the vertical loads and structural lines, objective to the achieved and relation between superstructure and infrastructure. So with this, we make a data list and a degree of credibility of all the data. To take one example, so the Red House of Mary, it is the presentation of the plan to show that the house made in mud brick is integrated inside an urban space, this part, and I've put the street on orange, but I don't know, to allow you to know how the house is present. So, with this, we can see that the house is only one side free. The other are occupied by other house. On the left, you can see the detail of the general map before, made by André Parot and his architect Jean Brusson. And on the right, you have the plan made by Jean-Claude Margueron after a first analysis. The house is composed of an oblong room by which the visitor penetrates and where he can see a staircase, a space equipped with a drainage of water here, giving onto another room, itself equipped by an drainage giving onto a sump here onto the street. Always in the oblong rooms, a door closing from the interior. We have seen the hinge bearing here, and the door is only be able to put open with the door like this, not in the other way. So, this central space deserves 3 other rooms, and the general unit of this house is 1150 to 1175 meters out to 1050 to 11 meters. It's necessary to stress that at the time of the discovery in 1954, the 8 of the preserved walls were 2 meters minimum. You can see on this that the worker are less than the walls preserved. In 50 years, the erosion has got the better of this rare conservation. However, you can see in 2004, there were just this stain. And these 2 pictures has been taken just at the end of the excavation made on 2004. However, this conservation has its importance compared to the volume of the collapsed superstructure, which correspond to one of the archaeological clues in favor of the existence of a floor upstairs. Indeed, the minimal height of the house must be estimated at 440 meters. From the plan, the architect of André Parot, Jean Bousson, had put forward two hypotheses of rebuilding, A and B. But it is starting from the analysis of the archaeological discoveries, quantity of the ground of burying, freeing the site, inch burying, and of the analysis of architecture, thickness of the wall's foundation, layout of spaces in relation to the lighting, staircase, control of the access, drainage of waters, nature of the ground of the central space, made by Professor Jean-Claude Margueron, that the other hypotheses, C, D, and I, could have been proposed to finally retain only option D, for the reason that are numerous and were not presented all here, but it was presented in an article dedicated to the first analysis of the Red House by Jean-Claude Margueron. So, without reconsidering all the criteria, let us quote some of strong clues. For the cover of the central space, the absence of drainage in this space, whereas such a device was found in the room 2. Here is the central space. The space 1, the room 1 is here, and the room 2 is here. So the street is here, and the sump here. So we have no device of drainage of water here, but there are one here. The nature of the ground of the central space in mud flow, not making it possible to support strong rains. For the existing floor upstairs, the thickness of the walls of foundation, the volume of collapse formed between the preserved wall, the presence of a staircase, the site of the inch bearing situating the door closing the access to the central space, so this door, it was closing, and the only way to be able to open it is to take the staircase and be down and pass by the central space to open it. We have not found another staircase and another way to know how it was done. But it was the only mean because of the site of the inch bearing and the presence of this staircase. It is interesting to see that the cover of the central space had already been envisaged by the architect Jean Bousson, we can see here. But also that no other opening elsewhere than to the central space site had been considered, what set out the problem of the light and air circulation. Indeed, we can see nothing in the rest of the house restitution, in spite that here they envisage, but we don't know exactly where there was window at the different level. In the same way, the presence of a floor upstairs had not been evoked at this point by Jean Bousson. Another example, the interest of the archaeological analysis is even more obvious in this example, to understand room 220 of the Mari Palace in Syria in the same place. Indeed, it is the analysis of the distribution of the fragment of painting. So, this picture shows the room itself, and all these circular points are the different fragments of painting found. Just down, you can see a detailed general view of the palace, and the room 202 is here. And this is the first floor, this is the second floor. So, thanks to the analysis of the distribution of the fragment of painting found in the rubble of the room, which made it possible to understand that the central zone pouring fragment, this compared to the site, had a logical reason. This area corresponds to the site of an opening in the wall of the room. It is the restitution made here. And this, it is the door, find thanks this distribution of the painting we can see here. an opening which is not found in the rice preserved in the bottom level and which it was thus necessary to consider on the floor upstairs. We have to stress that if this criterion is powerful, it does not determine the whole analysis of the circulation in the palace, but puts itself in the logic of a multitude of other clues which we'll not detail here. The architecture concerned with this methodology is not only the housing, which is only one specific case of all what concerns buildings in general. Other construction must be analyzed in the same way, in particular when nothing else remains but the foundations or a very low rise. This method can be used for any type of architecture, like housing, but palace, temple, store and warehouse, bridge, viaduct, etc. We will only take one example more that we will not detail in all, but just to present, it's the one of the Tello Bridge in Iraq. The first study of these remains began at the end of the 20s and finished in 1997. After being identified like an hypogeum, a reservoir, or the water regulator of a reservoir, and in spite of the hypothesis of a bridge proposed by Marie-Thérèse Barolet in 1965, it is following an analysis based on what we have just set out that these remains, so this is the plan and it is the picture taken after the excavation, could be identified like those of a bridge above a canal of the city by Professor Jean-Claude Margron. It is two hypotheses because we don't know about the arch, if the arch was circular or in other way. This example shows the importance of the analysis before any reconstitution and show that this method is not only relative to the housing. In conclusion, before any attempt of reconstruction, we absolutely need to do a complete archaeological analysis with an analysis of all rebuild data. A complete architecture analysis with an analysis of the foundation. Then only, in this case, erection in 3D modeling can be done. So, that implies a collaboration between the archaeologist aware of the architecture question, the architect, and the data processing specialist, where the first two manage the work of the third one. It is only thanks to this collaboration that 3D modeling could be effective and useful for our archaeological research. Thank you. Before the question, I just, because maybe everybody has not seen that there will be a presentation tomorrow by Carla Maria Amici about the critical approach to the 3D modeling monument, and it's in the same thing that we're dealing with here. It is page 99 of your program.
Okay, so with that, the floor is open for questions. I'll just go ahead and start with one. My question is that after hearing Elias' presentation, which he talks about the use of 3D modeling and this kind of projective of the idea that it would in some way change fundamentally what archaeology does, the way it operates, I would say, how do you see your scheme of fitting into that? The idea that the archaeologist does the work first, and then at the end of the process becomes a 3D model. Because I think what Elias was actually you talk about was this integration of those processes in a fundamental way.
I talk about just about the presentation of Hermann Servin because maybe the what we represent is the way to make the collaboration between informatic and archaeological analysis. Actually, there are a lot of presentation of restitution are just pretty images, but not real analytical old data of archaeology and architecture. It's difficult because they are in the archaeological point of view, what we can see does not exist, but it's not true. For example, the foundation where you have not the wall preserved, the foundation told you that there was something upstairs, but it was not conserved except for stone architecture, for example, not in mud brick or wood. But if it's not preserved, it didn't mean that it didn't exist. And that's the point. It's not a critical of it's not a critic of the informatic it's by itself, but of the use we have today of the informatic is not effective for archaeological research, but more for virtual heritage or heritage in general.
I guess I would pose the question to the audience then, if we have more computational methods of gathering data, and what you essentially work with first is digital information.
Mm-hmm.
How is the archaeologist prepared to do the analysis and things like that? My guess would be the archaeologist becomes an informatic specialist themselves, and those processes integrate very closely to what you have actually proposed.
Just one thing, for example, it was for Tai Baiba, if I remember well, or for Katna, for example. For Katna, it was in Syria too, it is in Syria too. They use the plan to rebuild in 3D modeling the palace of Katna. They use the plan of Mary Palace, but they use the Andre Parot plan, an old one. So it's not the fault to the informatic specialist,
right,
but for the archaeologic, for the archaeologist itself.
So the guidance wasn't there.
Yes, that's the point.
Any questions from the audience? Yes.
I have understood well. At the end, you said that maybe virtual reality is not useful. It's only useful, or should be only used, for a virtual heritage presentation. Were these your last words when you were?
Actually, a lot of, not all, because there are archaeologists who are aware for architectural question, but a lot of 3D modeling and restitution in general, it was in 2D like it was said just before, or in 3D the same. It was not done for scientific research, but more, much more for virtual heritage. Or to present to the general public a view of what we have found. But we have the possibility to present not only a pretty image, but a real analytical image of what we have found on in the excavation, not only by the archaeologist, but even who has made the excavation, but by all archaeologists who want to take all the data and see the credibility of what they were done before by the excavator by itself, or by the other person who has worked on the site, and take back all the data, see what they were taking into account of the reconstruction, and present another one, or keep the one presented by the excavator.
Yes, yes.
It will be better for me to present this in French, but
my idea was you were pointing at something that in my opinion is very important, is that usually we only use virtual reality as a beautiful image. But we should take, as you were saying, the architectural point of view in Japan, because we are having something which is 3D in class, so we have to include all this. And then I would say, and then add the testing aspect of it, not only of showing aspect. So, for example, in VAST, I think last year or the year before, someone presented a virtual room reconstruction, taking into account all the architectural elements and testing if this structure was actually, could actually work, be stand with the hypothesis they had, and if they modified some parameters of forces, I don't know exactly, I didn't understand all the technical aspects, but if this structure could still be stable or not.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I was meaning by saying we should use virtual reality in a more scientific way. And I think that what you're showing here goes really in this direction. And I don't know if you agree or not with what I was proposing before. And if this is what you meant.
Yeah, sure. I am very agree with you because, for example, it's what I told when I talk about this is the best example we can see because there are the third phases. The other one is what they found on this edition. The second part, it was just rising up the walls. And before we finish with a restitution, but they do not use the archaeological, they are not only architectural data, they are also archaeological data. For example, when the engineering is not an architectural part, but the importance was where we have found it, when I talked about the house before. Mm-hmm. So this is very general, it's not a casual, it's a general way to work in archaeology, sadly. For example, for Tal Meida, they didn't speak about the lighting they found between the walls in the rubble data, and they found not on the ground, but they found 1 meter, if I remember, one meter on the ground of the room. If they found something like this, not on the ground, it means that there are something upstairs. But they didn't speak about a second level in all the buildings found.
We have time for one last question.